Hello, and welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear true stories of inspiration and transformation and substance abuse and recovery. It's like a 12-step meeting on the air. So sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and listen in, because if you've ever wondered what happens in those 12-step meetings, you're about to find out.
Welcome to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. And for those of you who listen and know who we are, Steppin' Out Radio features true stories of people that have overcome addiction, depression, any kind of, you know, problem in their lives. And for the friends and family who want to help them and don't know where to go, we broadcast the stories of hope, though, and experience strength and hope. And we have with us, oh my God, such an extraordinary person, extraordinary actor. He's Lou Gossett Jr. He's been in too many movies and television shows to mention. My favorite, though, of course, is his role as an officer, as a Marine officer in An Officer and a Gentleman. He played alongside Richard Gere and Deborah Winger. Oh, gosh, he won a well-deserved Academy Award for that as Best Supporting Actor. He's won Emmy Awards, too many awards to list. It would take up this entire show. He's also the author of a book called An Actor and a Gentleman, and he's the founder of something really cool, especially, gosh, with everything happening, sadly, in the world today, the Erasism Foundation, which we'll talk about, too. And their ultimate mission is to contribute to the creation of a society where racism doesn't exist. Lou Gossett Jr. described what he considered a charm life growing up in Brooklyn, New York. He was raised by working parents, but as he just told me off the air, he was an only child, but there were so many people and children around, and that he'll talk about as well. He went to what many of you might not know is he went to NYU on a basketball scholarship and was invited to try out for the New York Knicks. Yet he decided to continue his acting career. And what a great thing for all of us who are his huge fans. But what we invited Lou Gossett Jr. on today is to, of course, talk about all that, but also how he overcame, you know, an issue, addiction issue, I guess, in his life. And welcome Lou Gossett Jr. to the show. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. And on Steppin' Out Radio, we usually begin at the beginning of the person's story, sort of leading up to what their life is like now. So how did your life start and, you know, how did it progress for you?
Well, I'm a post-depression child. Mm-hmm. And so all the people that grew up in the post-depression turned out to be pretty cool. After the Depression Franklin Delano Roosevelt's trying to raise the spirit of America, people were jumping out of the buildings, if you can remember the history books.
Sure.
And there were bread lines, and there was all kinds of that Oklahoma dust storm. Everybody was in terrible low spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually the unions began to start, and it was blamed to be communist, but it was not. It was the beginning of the unions, all through the actors, all through the laborers and stuff, and it was a thing to put America back together to work. And there was a blacklist started by Senator Estes Kefauver from Tennessee, and some of the intellectual cream of the crop at that place, some professors and some people in organizations and places, they had to change their names, mostly Jewish,
mm-hmm.
and they changed their names. And then in acting, there was the John Garfields and the Dalton Trumbos and the Maurice Karnofskys and Howard De Silvers.
Wow.
And then the others, some of the college professors, had to run from all the universities. The intellectual cream of the crop of America, straight from Europe.
Hmm.
And they came, and during the Depression, they came to New York to a sympathetic Board of Education chairman by the name of William Jansen.
Okay.
And he sent them to the Boondocks as they changed their names. And went to names, the names were Green, but the names were really Greenberg.
Hmm.
And Ross, who was Rosenberg, etc.
Right.
So I didn't know it at the time because I didn't come from a black neighborhood. I came from a mixed, diverse neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
very poor.
Okay.
So, and when we played, we had broomstick handles, the bats, and the third base was the Chevrolet on the left, and the girls had chalk and rope, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But we were in seventh heaven. We had created a society, a necessary society. My father, besides being a porter at the gas company, also worked in the fishing boats, and he would bring extra fish home and send it from door to door. Everybody had fish. Sometimes they'd salt it or fry it or pickle it. Depending on, it was Europe. It was
right.
An entire diverse neighborhood. So if I didn't get home in time, I could go next door and get the filter fish or next door to that to get the menudo or the Italian food, or the corned beef and cabbage, depending on who was home.
Yeah, nice upbringing, for sure. Yeah,
so it became a very solid, beautiful neighborhood. And before the cell phone, there were the old aunts and grandparents in the window making sure that everything was straight.
That's awesome.
And when the street lights came, we had to come home.
Mm-hmm.
So that was tough. We did that. So that's a wonderful man to do that.
Right.
We need to possibly get back to that today, but that's later we'll talk about.
If we only could, right? Social media puts a hard...
Yeah, they're kind of painting something that we need to move away. Anyway.
Right, okay.
So as we played in the streets, me and all my friends, the late Stanley Ralph Ross, who created Batman, and maybe it was a little bit of Neil Sedaka, maybe Howie Keitel. We all kind of played together basketball, football, and stickball.
Mm-hmm.
And we played together. And in the Jewish holidays, I started taking them off because I was by myself with a substitute Irish school teacher.
So it was a charm life.
You're not Jewish. I said, I know, but I'm in sympathy with the movement. They're playing good out there. I want to go join them.
Exactly.
So we were really, really tight. Mm-hmm. We created, because of that, a renaissance as we grew older. I was president of the junior high school and the high school and the captain of the team. And at 17, I was on Broadway because of that society.
Sure.
So that's one side of the society where I was carried on by the David Susskind.
Mm-hmm.
And those particular people, the Lou Wassermans, the William Morris Agency, I grew up with them, and they took very good care of me.
Okay, that's nice.
On the other side of my life, on my family side, I was first generation born in the North.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in the summer, if my parents were too tired, they'd send me and my cousins down to Georgia and to work on the watermelon farms.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was so we'd come back eating all that organic food. It didn't matter what it was, but it was organic.
Mm-hmm.
Even the pork and the beef and the milk. We came back really larger than life. And my uncles were my heroes. They were the great ball players. And they knew all the latest dances. And they had the cute girls. And they laughed a lot.
Uh-huh.
And the smell of smoke and alcohol and some funny smelling stuff was the smell of love for me.
Right.
And I wanted to be like them.
Sure.
But they wouldn't let me. I took resentment to that because I said, when I make it and I make my money, I'm going to be just like them because what they do is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
The highlight of my childhood, maybe about 7 years old, 12 years old, was they took me to a beer garden and gave me a shot glass of beer and put me on the thing and to listen to the Dodger game.
Wow.
And I was in seventh heaven. Uh-huh. I was one of them.
And you were 12. Okay.
No, I was 12 years old.
Now, did you take a sip of anything, or it was just...
I took a sip of the beer and stuff. It didn't, you know, it just made me feel like one of them, you know.
Right, sure.
I never really liked the stuff. I just know you had to do something like that and control it to belong and to be a man.
Got it. Okay.
That's the original rules from childhood all the way up.
Right.
If you can't handle your stuff, you can't handle your liquor, you can't handle partying hard and doing the best work for money to find that you're not a man.
Got it. Okay.
So at 17, I was a man.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd take it and I'd throw up sometimes. And mm-hmm. So my uncles have kept me aside saying, you're not going to be one of us. I understand why now, what I didn't then.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you're special. You're going to go to school. So the thing was, do what I say, don't do what I do.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. That didn't make sense. I watched them all die in front of me after the war.
Mm.
And so I carried the ball for them and wound up in NYU, which is really right there in Greenwich Village. And I became a hippie.
But were you on a basketball scholarship too?
Basketball, medicine, basketball scholarship. I did very little of the first couple of weeks of med school.
So you were a hippie basketball player. That's fun.
I was a hippie, you know. But it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with the fact that if you can do the best work and bring the curtains down and get everybody to love you, you can do anything you want on the weekends.
There you go. Okay.
But the challenge of a manhood was to do anything you want on the weekends.
Right.
Wake up, maybe go to church. But Monday morning, you do the best work there is around.
And you did that.
And Friday, at the end, you celebrate.
Yeah.
You see how many movies and plays I did to celebrate. So I worked on that. I worked on my disease quite a bit.
Right.
And we do pretty good. So I was call myself quite a man to be able to go to Broadway and do that and bring the house down and get back in the taxi and go down to the village and sing some songs. And get stoned a little bit with some of the people who have made history here.
And we're going to find out what happened after that, the next phase of your life, which sounds, gosh, so interesting. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McAtee, your host. We have with us the extraordinary actor, Lou Gossett Jr., and we're going to be back with more of his story on Steppin' Out Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to Stepping Out Radio. I'm Denise McIntyre, your host. And as those of you who know us, or if you're just tuning in, Stepping Out Radio is true stories of people that have triumphed over adversity in their lives and have come out on the other side and are here to share with us what they learned and how they did it. And the person that I'm excited that we were talking to and we just left before the break is actor extraordinaire Lou Gossett Jr. And again, before we left the break, he was telling us he went to NYU. He started acting. He adored his uncles. And you could, as long as you did your work, great Monday through Friday, you could let loose on the weekends. So what happened next in your life?
And then I started acting. You know, I worked with Shirley Booth, and I got a little prejudice down in Delaware when they wouldn't let me in the restaurant, and Shirley Booth threatened to leave if they didn't let me in. So they all let me in. But I had very minimal experience racially.
Sure.
Because of the society that I grew up with was completely mixed.
Right.
Now, but there was the black neighborhood, the Irish neighborhood, but we went to school together and played together every day. So we had a composite, a wonderful thing, and it was wonderful.
Wow.
And there's nobody homeless. If they were homeless walking the streets, we'd take them and put them in the bathtub and give them hand-me-downs and feed them.
Yeah.
That's the way we were.
What a world.
I have a sneaking suspicion we may have to be that way again. Anyway, so then in the village, the philosophy of the folk singer, the Bob Dylans and all those pretty people, was the songs of love, once again. But along with it came, sophisticated things that was much better than the Prince Calvert that my uncles and stuff died on. So I figured that was better. But it made me cough and stuff, and I had to be careful not to smell like that when I went to work.
Right.
But I handled it, so I felt very much like a man for the next 10, 15 years. I was able to handle it and had discipline, and I was an athlete. And,
sure.
And I showed up and then brought the houses down in theater, and then I started into television, and that was wonderful. So I figured that's the lifestyle. That's it.
Right.
But I did not know that the doctors tell you, and it's true, that once you start doing that, even when you're first, a disease is being born. And it's very quiet and very patiently taking control of your thinking and your body.
Right.
I had no idea. But I was overcoming it because I was a young, strong athlete.
And you don't think anybody else suspected, like, wow, Lou, you know, Lou might be doing too much of this or that? Or
no, because they were doing too much.
Okay.
Those are the people I'm hanging out with.
Okay, got it.
I won't mention names both on Broadway and off-Broadway. They were the ones that brought me the best stuff.
Right.
You're doing bad stuff. Here's the good stuff. Don't do that, Thunderbird. Do Courvoisier.
Right, okay.
You know, don't do that. Do this, you know.
So at what age are you now, Lou? Are you like a...
I'm in my late 20s.
Okay. So it's, you know, you're handling it, you're managing it.
I'm handling
it.
I'm doing very well, winning awards. And
oh, my God.
I got the best newcomer award back, and I'm doing it. I'm shuttling from Broadway to the village and singing music, and that became a new career.
Wow.
Wrote a song and gave it to Richie Havens because
I
got the
Richie
job.
Havens. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and
it's
called Handsome Johnny Against the War.
You're kidding. You wrote that?
I wrote that for Richie.
Oh, I love that song.
So then I was being evicted in California, and the same day I got a residual check from Handsome Johnny, and I could stay there.
And
that neighborhood had,
you
know, Kenny Rankin and those guys across the street, Tim Harden.
Yeah, you always go to the Turning Point. I don't know if you're familiar in Piermont, and used to always go and see Kenny Rankin, and
there
then at
go.
Different times Richie Havens, and I missed them
Havens
both.
And the late Charlie Smalls, who wrote The Wiz.
Yes, I missed them both.
Yeah,
oh,
Richie Pryor.
Yep.
They were all of us. We hung out very strongly together.
Gosh.
And, of course, the through line is a joint here, something from back in Paris or from Afghanistan. It was just really nice, and we passed the guitars.
But you're so much
I lived
much
in London
talent,
for a couple
Lou.
Of, for a year. Lived in London with all the Beatles and all the Rolling Stones and others. I don't mention their names. We closed a place called the Baghdad Gardens and passed the guitar around and get stoned.
But I mean, you were an athlete. You were almost on the Knicks. You're an actor.
Oh, yeah.
You write songs.
I woke up doing the exercises and staying pretty strong for many, many years.
Okay, so your life is so fascinating, too,
right.
On top of it all. So you were in
1966.
Okay.
And I'm with the William Morris Agency. I got David Suskind and all of New York on my side and said, Lou Wasserman has started Universal. They started the movies of the week.
Mm-hmm.
The very first movie of the week was called Companions, A Nightmare. and it started Melvin Douglas, Ann Baxter, Donna Winter, Gig Young, Patrick O'Neill, William Redfield, and Melvin Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to put me in it as the homicide detective, because it was a group therapy group and somebody was killing one another.
Okay.
So I had to scream at those people that I admired.
Mm-hmm.
So they put me on an airplane. It's in my book. And they put me on a TWA with the propellers. That's when they sliced the meat in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And the limousine came out to the tarmac and picked me up first. Took me to the presidential suite of the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Wow.
I'm flying high.
Yeah, this is heady stuff.
I mean,
sure.
This is heaven, you know.
Yeah.
So they say, oh, by the way, you have a rental car. Do you know Los Angeles?
Yes.
Okay, so the rental car is at Crescent Heights in Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And you know where the Beverly Hills Hotel is?
Approximately
20 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I go and I get the car, and it's a Galaxy Ford Fairlane 500 with a hard top convertible. The top goes down, and it's eggshell white and red interior. And I'm in seventh heaven, so I put on some Sam Cooke music, a little loud.
Right.
And I start driving down Sunset to the hotel. Instead of 20 minutes, it took me 4.5 hours.
Wow.
For the first time in my life, I met every policeman everywhere. They came from over to see who this crazy person is.
Wow.
To drive with his top down with that loud music on Sunset Boulevard.
Wow.
I met every policeman within miles.
Wow.
4.5 hours later, I got back to the hotel, and the guy says, you look a little worn. What happened? I told him. And he said, oh, man, those guys, they don't behave here. Okay, so I get a great meal. And he says, you know what? We have some movie stars' homes here. Why don't you take this map here and go look at the homes?
Mm-hmm.
As Greer Garson was there, and Clark Gable had a home, and I was walking the street.
Wow.
More than 20 minutes, the cops took me and handcuffed me into a tree for 3 hours.
Oh, my God. Sorry.
So now what is being born is some kind of resentment and anger and fear. And I wanted to go home, go back to the village, back to New York where everything was cool.
And now you're in your 30s.
I'm in my 30s, and I call my agent, my best friend, Ed Bondi. Mm-hmm. He said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I guess I'm going to get up in the morning and go to work. He said, that's what I expect you to do. Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to Universal, and the movie's called Campaigns, a Nightmare. Gig Young got an Emmy for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Lou Wasserman, and he overrode all of the blue-collar workers. And he gave me his parking spot. So the explanation in retrospect is all the blue-collar workers of Los Angeles at the time, like L.A. Confidential, the movie.
Right, okay.
They were descendants of people out of Oklahoma, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama. They were the police. They were the blue-collar workers.
Wow.
They were very racist. You know, they come from the slavery.
Sure.
So...
And you had never experienced this, which is...
I had never experienced.
Wow, which is, you know...
So I went hiding, and I was feared, and I had to behave myself. And the cowboys gave me wild horses, and the clothes had fleas in them, and bad smelling, and they mistreated me terribly.
Ugh.
Although Lou Wasserman didn't know it, I had to learn how to handle that.
Right.
And the fear got big enough for me to hide out with my friends who got high and drank. And then it came, instead of starting on Friday night, it began Friday afternoon.
So maybe it was even a different kind of drinking.
Over to Monday.
Right? Because it was out of fear.
Yeah.
So
it was out of being someplace where that didn't exist.
And you know what? We're going to find out, Lou, when we come back, you know, how this, you know, transpired and what happened. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio to an incredible story of Lou Gossett Jr.'s life and how his life went along. And you can hear it, the progression maybe of his addictions. But he overcame them. And he's here to share with us unselfishly giving of his time. And he does it all over. He's also the author of a book. Check it out. An Actor and a Gentleman. And also, I urge you to go to his foundation's website. It's called the Eracism Foundation. And you can find them at eracismfoundation.org. We'll be back with more of Lou Gossett's story on Steppin' Out Radio. Welcome back to Steppin' Out Radio. Every week, we share two stories of people that have overcome insurmountable odds. But the good news is they've not only survived, they've thrived. And they're here to share with us what they did and their experience, strength, and hope with you. And you can hear all sorts of stories. We have a new mobile app. You could go to the App Store, and it's called Stepping Out Radio. And all the stories will be in there, from all sorts of issues, from gambling to drug addiction, now opioid addiction. We have young people, and because we're on the Armed Forces Radio Network, we have the vets. So please check us out and sign up for our free newsletter at steppingoutradio.com. And we're here with Lou Gossett Jr., who's the extraordinary Academy Award, Emmy Award, every award actor. And he's sharing his incredible story of his life and how his addiction was intertwined in everything that happened to him. So you were in LA, you weren't treated well, you had a fear, and I'm assuming your drinking might have increased at that time?
Well, you know, it was go to get my solace in the people who drank and got high. Mm-hmm. The guys I sang music with, so I gravitated to Topanga Canyon.
Okay.
And that's what we did on a daily basis. And then when I go to work, I'd put it down. And I did Roots when I was there. And wow. Roots was an evolution, you know.
Sure.
And, but every time I won something, I was always somebody with the face, you still got to prove yourself.
Wow.
So I took it very personally. Mm-hmm. And then I moved a little bit to Malibu and wasn't really accepted, but they picked me out of a crowd, and so I was by myself, so I had to gravitate to those particular people once again.
Were your parents alive at this point, Lou? Were your parents
My mom died after Topanga Canyon.
Okay.
So my dad had died 2 years before that, of alcoholism.
Okay, so yes. So
all of the men.
So you're alone, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're in Malibu, you weren't really accepted,
I'm in Malibu, and, you know, so that's where I got my Oscar. And I used all of that resentment and anger for what was happening to me in that character.
That was some character, whoa.
And they sent me to San Diego, and I came back with three Marines. And I was that Marine until the end of that movie. I went to basic training.
Wow.
And they should have gotten the Oscar because they made the movie real.
Oh, but you were... I've watched that movie millions of times. I made
and
my
they
daughters
used me to show that I represented them properly.
No, you did. It was... People can get the chills watching your performance in that. So even when you're standing there accepting your Oscar, you're still feeling like...
It was a pleasant surprise.
But were you finally feeling like, okay, I am, you know...
I'm tiptoeing, the light's up, and I'm tiptoeing.
Okay.
The light's on, God's light is on. So I go to the supermarket in Malibu, and everybody in the supermarket started to applaud.
Oh.
And we had a mascot in Malibu by the name of Paul Newman, because he had Paul Newman eyes, you know, the beard all the way down to his waist. And he had a shopping cart and burlap instead of shoes on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave him money so he could, you know, get drunk a little bit and stuff.
Right.
So as I come out of the supermarket, he says, "What is that noise in there?" I said, "Oh, they're applauding me." He says, "They're applauding you?" I said, "Yes." "What for?" I said, "Well, I just won an Academy Award." He said, "What?" I said, "Won Academy Award? You mean you won an Academy Award Oscar?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Wow, congratulations." And he took his finger and pointed it at my face and said, "You still got to behave yourself."
Mm. This is from a mascot of Paul Newman, right?
from a homeless man.
Wow.
Drunk. Huh. No matter how big you get, you still got to behave yourself. Zero tolerance.
Interesting.
So I raised an enormous resentment, and that opened the door for my disease.
Mm.
So I had a fight with that disease for the next couple of years, back and forth, trying to get sober.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to settle for less. So me and my buddies in Hollywood, we got high together. And we went to Monte Cassino in Italy and got into the mud, into the Dead Sea, into Sedona and sweat lodges. And there was just a brief respite from the reality that the disease is stronger than me.
Right.
Took three times. And the third time, I was on a way of death, and none of that stuff worked in my system anymore.
Wow.
So I went to get sober, and it's been that way ever since. So I have two respects. My disease, which is much stronger than me, and I have to align myself with something that's stronger than me and the disease combined, and that's God.
Right, and that's God for so many people. Now,
and every day, I've got to reestablish that relationship, every day.
Now, when you finally turned it around, What do you think was different about that time, just because your body couldn't take it anymore, or was there a shift in your mind?
A shift in my mind and my body.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that was getting me over, my ability to act, started to deteriorate, and there was nothing underneath it.
Okay.
So it was my bottom.
Right. And did you go away at that point to a rehab center? Did you go to a rehab center to get sober?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Okay. And was your drug of choice mostly alcohol and marijuana or other things?
Well, mostly specifically freebase cocaine.
Yeah, so that's very hard to...
Marijuana was a buffer for it.
That's very hard to quit, obviously.
And I was an expert scientist, a chemist, and everybody who joined me, because I did mix it the better.
Got it. Okay, so the third time was the charm.
Yeah.
And I guess you did what's called surrender, and then you worked at it through God.
Mm-hmm.
And how has it gone on for you? How do you...
Oh, it's outstanding. I speak globally.
I know you do, yeah.
Meetings and stuff. And there's a neon sign that everybody, especially these children, need to hear. Because
mm-hmm.
it's a neon sign for me that kept me from going negative into positive. And that neon sign says, resentment. The worst resentment that you can have is the one you feel justified to keep.
That's so... Yeah, resentment is huge, right?
It'll kill you. It'll
right.
Kill you.
And that's...
You may as well take a six gun and cock it and put it to your head and say, I'll show you.
Right. How does one get rid of resentment when they have every reason to have it? Like for people that really, and you obviously did, being...
There are prayers in our steps.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do the steps deep enough, the resentment will disappear.
Okay.
And then there are people who have lived, who really have justification to be resentful, like a Nelson Mandela.
That's what I'm thinking,
Dr.
right?
Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
And he was gone for 27 years, and he came out with a smile on his face.
Yeah. But did they have addiction issues? That's the thing. But,
yeah.
But it's true. Resentment will kill you physically, mentally,
spiritually. It'll kill you completely. Shut all the doors. Open the door for the disease, and it makes sense for you to do all kinds of insane things.
Now, was it hard
for... The doorway to insanity.
Did you have to leave behind your close friends who you partied with? Was that hard?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
some of them joined me to get sober, and some are old lifetime friends. Others have died, and others are still out there dying.
And so what's your life like now?
It gets bored to them, and they kind of disappear.
And what is your life like now in sobriety?
Now, at this age, at this time of sobriety, it's the best time I could ever remember.
That's great.
Other than when that little shot glass of beer, listening to the Dodgers, being with my uncles.
All the way back then,
learned.
Right?
I wish they were alive so I could teach them.
Right, because you saw them all pass away, right?
Yeah, die with the same disease that so many of us have.
And now what are you working on now? I'd like to promote anything.
I'm getting ready to direct a movie about the great Ernie Banks.
Okay, great.
I've got four movies in the can that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But my number one thing is my selfless service with the Erases the Foundation. Trying to open up at least one center for it to be a test program.
And it's racismfoundation.org. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. To teach them, creating that young 8 to 15 generation,
mm-hmm.
how they can be sensitive to one another. Their dress code, their philosophy, the knowledge of their culture and someone else's, conflict resolution, physical fitness, spirituality, together, so that when they take over, racism is at a minimum.
That's beautiful.
And that's the way it was when I grew up after the Depression.
Yeah, it sounds like you had that, right.
That's what we had.
Right.
And we still made a renaissance in art and sports and everything else because of it.
Right. And I think a lot of people... I think, I really think social media makes things worse and everything like that. And, you know, there are so many good people and we don't hear about that.
You have to look at the people sending the messages out on social media and they're not as involved.
Right.
They should be. For example, a lot of kids, they're all colors, but mostly black, fighting the cops these days.
Mm-hmm.
So they're adversary against adversary.
Right.
But if those black kids, those American Indians, those mm-hmm. Latinos, but go back and know about their culture that's centuries older than America.
Right.
And learn about their rules. And perhaps we're trying to get equal in something that's less than us.
That's
maybe our job then is to sharpen that culture up and contribute it to the whole of America. And bring everything else up rather than fighting for rights or something that really is less than our desires.
That's amazing. And you're ahead of your time, obviously, with everything happening. You did this a while ago. So everybody that's listening, please check out racismfoundation.org. You've been listening to Lou Gossett Jr., the extraordinary person and actor. And again, check out his book. It's on Amazon or, you know, wherever you can buy books. It's called An Actor and a Gentleman.
And get Foundation, what's in it?
Excuse me?
We have it on the foundation, too.
And the foundation. And get involved. You know, after you heard this, go on the website.
Start with yourself.
Right.
And come join.
And good.
And don't boo, vote. Is that what Barack Obama said? Don't boo, vote.
Yeah, that was great the other night, right? That was the first thing I think you said. That was interesting and profound, really, when you think about it. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right.
What is your, you also have LouGossettJr.com, right?
Louis Gossett Jr.
LouisGossettJr.com, right, for all your roles and, oh gosh, when you, everything.
You're IMDB. What happens to IMDB?
Right.
Is the best way.
Thank you so much. And continued success, and thanks for all you do for people in recovery and people in the world.
God bless. Have a blessed day.
You too. Thank you so much.
Bless.